queens, welcome to Dose of Deception with the Queens of Queens, Shannon and Emily.
Join our true crime family where we discuss murders, missing persons cases, mysteries, and a whole lot of conspiracy theories. So stay tuned for the wild ride.
Hey queens, welcome back to this episode of Dose of Deception. Before we get started, if you're a new listener, we just want to let you know what we do here on the show. So the first half, Emily comes in with a true crime case, whether it be a murder mystery or a missing person case. And in the second half, I come in with a conspiracy theory that we discuss. Also, before we get started, we just want to let you know about our different social media accounts. Our Facebook group is at Dose of Deception, as well as our Instagram. So Emily, what are we starting with this week?
So this week, we're going to start with an unsolved murder, and this case is still technically open today. It occurred in 1957, and it is the case of the boy in the box, also known as John Doe.
This is one of the older ones you've done so far.
Oh, yeah, this is definitely one of the older ones. Mm-hmm. And to this day, nobody knows the identity of this boy.
Wow.
It's a crazy one. So on February 25th, 1957, the body of a small boy was found inside a box in Fox Chase, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Investigators put the boy's age between 4 and 6 years old, and to this day, he is still an unidentified murder victim. Mm. The case remains open, but it is a cold case, as nobody ever could figure out who the boy is or where he came from.
That's interesting you say that, because when you first mentioned this case, I was imagining a baby. Because to me, it's much weirder that a 4-year-old to a 6-year-old would disappear and nobody would try to claim him.
Yeah, definitely, as opposed to like someone who just had a baby
and just abandoned it. Yeah.
Yeah. So the body was actually first discovered by a man named John Stachowiak, who hunted muskrat, and he actually stumbled upon the box while checking for his traps for any kills. Mm. Now, John was scared that the cops would confiscate his traps and wouldn't let him hunt muskrat anymore, especially because he was setting traps on the illegal dumping ground.
Oh.
So he didn't go to the authorities with the discovery.
What?
He just left the box there.
Come on.
I know.
Well, I mean, at that point, is it just all he doesn't know what's in it? He just thinks it's a box.
No, he found the body. Yeah.
And he didn't say anything?
No, he didn't say anything because he didn't want his muskrat traps to get confiscated.
Come on.
I know. So, only a few days after this encounter with the boy in the box, another man named Frank Guthrum, mm-hmm. who's actually a college student at the time, and he claims that he saw a rabbit running into some bushes, and so he went to follow the rabbit because he knew that there were traps there, mm-hmm. and he stumbled upon the body in the box. Mm. Now, he was also reluctant to go to authorities with this information, and it came out later that, you know, there's a bunch of different accounts of this, but mm-hmm. I believe he was kind of creeping on some girls mm. and kind of watching them,
okay.
and so he didn't want to go to the police with this information and not be able to say why he was in that area, but the following day he felt too guilty hiding it, and so okay. he eventually went to authorities with it.
Good.
When authorities examined the boy, they noticed, as I said, that he was placed between 4 and 6 years old. Mm-hmm. However, he was severely small and malnourished for his age. I believe he's only 30 pounds.
Whoa.
And so he looked more like a 2-year-old, they say.
Yeah.
They also noticed that the boy was naked and he appeared to be battered. Although he was naked, he was wrapped in a blanket. And authorities tried to trace back the blanket to try to find where it came from, maybe. But they could only determine that it was either made in Canada or North Carolina. Mm. So this really led nowhere.
Yeah.
He was inside a cardboard box, which once contained a bassinet from JCPenney. Mm. So it was a box from JCPenney, and luckily the serial number was still on it. Mm. And so they were able to trace it back to the exact JCPenney that it was bought from.
Okay.
They went to talk to them, and it turns out 12 people had purchased that bassinet within the, you know, recent time.
Okay.
Now, unfortunately, all 12 people paid in cash, so there was no trace of anyone.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Come on.
So after they found this out, they, you know, put on the news and stuff, and they could see it. So yeah. Actually 8 of the people came forward, and they were like, investigate, go ahead.
Yeah.
Or like they still had their box with them.
Yeah.
So they showed authority. So 8 of them were cleared, but the other 4 never came forward.
Mm.
So they couldn't really figure out who had purchased the box.
Was the JCPenney a local one to where they found the box and body?
Yeah, it wasn't super far. Mm-hmm. This all took, everything, like the theories and everything, all
yeah.
take place kind of in the same general area.
Okay.
They also noticed, interestingly, that the boy's hair had recently been cut off to make it short because there was clumps of hair stuck all over his body. Mm. So he had like kind of like a buzz cut.
Yeah.
But they believe that his hair was actually long when he mm. died. So authorities speculate that this could have happened after his death, the haircut.
Yeah.
He was also severely malnourished, and he had surgical scars on his ankle and his groin, and also another scar underneath his chin.
Mm.
The first thing police did was take the boy's fingerprints in hopes of identifying him. They also checked all hospitals in the local area to see if there was any birth records.
Mm-hmm.
And since he had 3 surgical scars, if they were done professionally,
yeah.
there would be record of him being in hospital somewhere.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, nothing came back in the system and no records were indicated of the boy.
Dang.
And so they just called him John Doe, and to this day, he still is John Doe.
Mm.
Despite this case being all over the news, and the Philadelphia Inquirer printing 400,000 flyers with the boy's information on it.
Wow.
Yeah. Nobody ever came forward claiming the boy or even with any information regarding him.
That's surprising that there's not even a hint.
Well, there are hints about him, yeah. But most of them led nowhere. The main theories that they have, which I'll get to in the end, mm-hmm. are pretty much the only ones they have. But in terms of, like, anyone who directly knew the boy, mm-hmm. there was nothing that came forward. Mm. You would think also that somebody would at least anonymously, like, come forward. Especially yeah. if they, like, for instance, let's say it's the boy's parents who did this.
Yeah.
You'd think if they had uncles, aunts, siblings yeah. or something, they would come forward with it, but mm-hmm. maybe not necessarily want their name to be out there.
Yeah.
But still. Over 270 police officers thoroughly searched every single inch of the area where the boy was found. And they actually found a few pieces of evidence, or potential evidence in yeah. this case. They found a blue corduroy cap, a kid's scarf, and a white handkerchief with the letter G on it.
Okay.
They were very hopeful that this would give some kind of lead as to who placed the boy there.
Yeah.
They did discover that the blue corduroy hat was made by a small company owner, run by a woman named Mrs. Hannah Robbins, and it was located in South Philly. So they went and talked to her, and she actually said that she remembers exactly who bought this hat. Mm-hmm. It was a blonde man between the ages of 26 and 30, because she said that this was a custom-made hat. He asked him to sew a buckle on it, I believe. Yeah. And so she remembered exactly his face. She could identify him when she saw him.
Whoa.
However, the man paid in cash, and she never saw him again.
Mm.
So there was no way to locate him.
Yeah.
Now, as I said earlier, the boy was battered, and on top of this, decomposition made it very difficult to recognize him. Mm-hmm. So, in hopes of getting someone to recognize him, or at least some info on the case, they actually reconstructed his face post-mortem. Mm. They dressed him, and they sat him up and took pictures of him to make him look like he was just a boy sitting there.
That's disturbing.
Yes. Although you can definitely tell he's not alive, they did reconstruct it on what he would look like normally, so mm-hmm. you'd get a better idea of it.
Yeah. I've never seen someone, like a police force or anyone, do that kind of work into an investigation. Like, I've seen, you know, you can draw a picture based on what you think the boy would look like, but I've never seen them reconstruct something like that.
Yeah, from what I gather, they really put all their time and efforts into this, and a lot of money went into trying to find out who this boy was.
Yeah, it seems like it.
But unfortunately, even though they distributed flyers with this new, you know, face on it,
yeah,
this turned up nothing as well.
Mm.
So let's get into some theories, because that's basically all the information we have about this boy.
Yeah.
So most of the theories have been dismissed because they didn't lead anywhere, but a few of them did stand out. So the first theory, there was a foster home owned by a man named Arthur Nicoletti, and it was only located 1.5 miles from where the body was found.
Mm.
So the investigator on this case, his name was Remington Bristow, which, okay. first of all, that's a cool name.
Very investigator name.
Right?
Yeah.
So Remington actually researched this case until his death in 1993.
Mm.
And he contacted a psychic from New Jersey in 1960, so 3 years after they found the body. And this psychic, although, you know, it's not hard evidence that yeah. a psychic leads you somewhere, they actually led him to the foster home, from the discovery site right to the foster home.
Okay.
When Remington went inside the home, he found a bassinet similar to the one JCPenney was selling.
Oh.
And also, the blankets that the boy was wrapped in were similar to the ones hanging to dry at the foster home as well.
Mm.
Now, Arthur Nicoletti had a stepdaughter as well, who's also ran the foster home with him.
Okay.
And Remington's official theory is that the boy was a child of this stepdaughter, and that they were keeping it on the down low, but when the boy accidentally dies, you know, obviously this is just a theory, so there's no exact cause, but Remington believes that it was possibly from drowning,
mm-hmm.
They disposed of his body so that the woman would not be publicly outed as an unwed mother.
Mm.
Also, obviously, we don't know, but it could have also been the stepdad's kid,
yeah,
so they probably just wanted to keep it on the down low.
100%.
Yeah.
I would understand.
Yeah, and you also have to remember it's 1950, so, like, I feel like people would kill their spouses as opposed to getting divorced back
yeah.
then. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, everything was so shameful, so
yeah.
this was a different time period.
Mm. I can see that.
However, all the evidence in this theory are circumstantial,
yeah.
and no hard evidence has ever been found. There is virtually no links between the boy and the foster family, and they actually went back in 1998 to do an interview with the family, so a few years after Remington actually passed away,
mm-hmm.
and they completely removed them as suspects, mainly because it was discovered that the woman actually had a child who died from being electrocuted. He was actually, this is a crazy thing, because I think about it all the time when I was
yeah.
a kid. I used to go on those rides, like outside the deli, those
yeah.
ones. He was riding one of those, and he got electrocuted while he was riding it and died.
What?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, I can't even imagine
That's scary. I've never been scared of those ever.
Me
and now, all of a sudden.
They were so fun when I was little.
That's crazy. That's weird. I've never heard of that happening ever.
Me neither. Now, this boy, unfortunately, passed away. However, it was not the boy in the box. So she did have a son, but it didn't match.
Yeah.
And when they went back to do the 1998 interview, they discovered that the stepdad and the stepdaughter were married now, which is...
A little weird.
Not really my thing. But,
yeah.
But they took DNA from the girl, and they discovered that it did not match the boy in the box. So it went out the window.
Yeah, then that theory is literally impossible then if they don't match at all.
Exactly.
And also the theory was kind of based on a psychic, which how much are you going to make that your main evidence?
Yeah, but I mean, especially if they had absolutely no evidence, people were excited when they finally had some kind of a theory.
That's true.
The second theory was regarding a man named Kenneth Dudley. Mm. And him and his wife actually had 10 children total. Mm. Now, one day, one of their 7-year-old daughters died from malnutrition and neglect, and this was the same way that the little boy in the box believed to have died. So instead of burying her and getting in trouble, they wrapped her in a blanket and left her in the woods.
Mm.
Authorities began an official investigation into the Dudleys in 1961, and they actually discovered that 7 of their children out of the 10 had died from malnutrition and neglect without proper burials.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Okay.
So they were all just kind of left outside in blankets type
thing. That's crazy.
They discarded their bodies to avoid getting in trouble. However, there was no evidence of the boy in the box living with them ever, and none of their 7 deceased children was the boy, so it doesn't hold much weight, and authorities just believe that they were just shitty parents. Which I get. I feel like back in the day, though, that was, like, a thing. Like, that was normal.
And it doesn't... But it doesn't prove that it's not him to me.
No, it doesn't.
Well, I guess they have enough kids that they can get the DNA from those kids to make sure that it's not the kid in the box.
Yeah, they said this theory is completely out the window as well.
Yeah, so that probably means they did some kind of research into the matching the DNA. But that would have been, like, picture-perfect what you would think would have been happening in that scenario.
I know. Now, so basically they were back to square one. However, in 2002, this is a pretty late theory. This is the theory that I believe holds the most weight, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a theory of the woman known as Martha, or simply just M. They call her M because I'm not sure if her actual name is Martha. I'm going to call her Martha for the sake of this podcast. Yeah. So this theory developed in February 2002, which is pretty recent considering the murder happened in 1957.
Yeah, very.
A woman named Martha, she was actually from a mental hospital, so authorities said that her testimony is credible, but they don't want to completely say it's credible.
Yeah.
However, she has information that the general public did not know.
Mm.
So okay. I'd really take her word for it.
Okay.
She came forward claiming that her abusive mother had bought a boy in 1954, who they named Jonathan. And she bought him from his birth parents who did not want him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this also goes hand in hand because another theory, somebody came forward and said that, I believe it was in 1961, somebody came forward and said that they had rented out an apartment to someone.
Okay.
And they had found, so the person who they were renting out to had told them that they had sold their son, which I don't really know why you tell someone that.
Yeah.
But this makes sense because it was all in the general area, so maybe they sold their son, Martha's mom bought him, and named him Jonathan. Martha told police that one night, after they ate dinner, and their dinner consisted of baked beans, which is very important because the coroner said they actually had found baked beans in his stomach that they believe he ate about 2 hours prior to his death, and that wasn't released to the public, so Martha knew that he ate baked beans.
Mm,
so that kind of gives it more credibility.
Yeah.
So after they ate dinner, little Jonathan threw up his food, and he received a very severe beating as a result.
Mm.
And although he survived the beating, he died shortly later from the wounds because Martha says that she was slamming his head into the ground.
Mm.
So I think from the head trauma, he died in his bath.
Mm.
Now, this is also important because when they found his body, authorities noticed that his hands and his toes were pruned, and it looked like he had just been in the water. So this also gives credibility. And that's also why originally Remington, with the other theory about the foster home, thought that maybe he had accidentally died from drowning because his body was kind of water-soaked.
Yeah.
But now Martha's saying he was in the bath, and this wasn't really released to the public either. So this is very interesting that she would say this.
Yeah.
Martha says that the boy had been sexually and physically abused for 2.5 years prior to his beating that ended his life. And this timeline makes sense because that means that she would have purchased him, like, 1954.
Yeah.
It would also account for why the boy's body was severely beaten when it was found. The coroner also found that the boy's hands and feet showed signs of being wet, and they found remnants of the baked beans in his stomach, so obviously this adds a lot of credibility to her statement.
Yeah, and it's most interesting because she wouldn't have just known that. You know?
Exactly. Martha then goes on to say that her mom forced her to go along and dump the boy's body.
Mm.
She says that she remembers her mom cutting Jonathan's hair after his death in an attempt to completely change his identity so they would not get caught. Because if he had long hair and you cut it all off, there's, like, I mean, obviously you can still recognize his face, but there's a lesser chance of being caught. Mm-hmm. And that would also account for why there were clumps of hair on his body.
Yeah, and it also makes sense even more why she wouldn't want to come forward if she was a part of getting rid of the body.
Exactly. Even though she didn't have a choice, you can still, you know, think that you're going to be in trouble for it. Martha also says that right when they were about to remove Jonathan's body from the trunk to dispose of it, a man on a motorcycle pulled over to see if they needed help, because they were kind of struggling to pick it up, I guess. Mm-hmm. Martha's mom also made her stand right in front of the car to block the license plate so that the man would not be able to go to authorities with any info if he did see on the next, like, on the news the following day, mm-hmm. the same box that they had been carrying to dump. Martha's mom told the man that they did not need help, and he actually accepted and just went on his way. Mm-hmm. This also makes sense because the authorities finally released it and said that after they had seen the news on the box, a man came forward, an unidentified man came forward and said that he had actually seen someone dumping a box there. So that makes sense in terms of her theory.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is all word of mouth. There was no hard evidence that they could find to go back onto this theory. Mm-hmm. Now, while interviewing neighbors of Martha and her family who lived there during the 1950s, mm-hmm. the neighbors all rejected her theories as ridiculous. Mm. However, what I'm thinking about is that there's a good chance the neighbors thought Jonathan was a little girl, considering that before puberty, I feel like boys and girls are essentially the same, especially because his hair was long.
Yes.
And they found, on his body, they found evidence that his eyebrows had been styled and tweezed, mm-hmm. and he also had really clean-cut, like, fingernails, toenails. Yeah. They kept him kind of in good shape, so there's a good chance that they were also dressing him as a girl.
Yeah.
And that kind of would make sense if they just really didn't know.
Yeah, and only 4 to 6. That's young enough that you don't have distinctive features yet.
Definitely. Since Martha revealed, too, that she was sexually abused by her mother, so that's mm-hmm. important to note, Martha was older, so she was 11 at the time. She mm-hmm. had been being sexually abused for a while, and she claims that her mother bought Jonathan to kind of be like a sex slave. Mm. So it is possible that the mother, since she was sexually abusing Martha for so long, she had wanted a little girl, mm-hmm. but was only able to purchase Jonathan.
Yeah.
This also makes sense because, his, like I said earlier, he did have signs of scarring from surgeries. Hmm. However, there was no hospital records indicating a surgery, so this could indicate that it was an at-home one, and he had a scar in his groin. Mm-hmm. So that makes me feel like there was some kind of potential, like, genital mutilation kind of surgery going on. I mean, that would make sense. And mm-hmm. also the fact that he was dressed as a girl, maybe she just really wanted a little girl.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense to me.
And this original theory was developed by a forensic artist named Frank Bender, about him being raised as a little girl. And so he actually had, in 2008, he released a sketch of the unidentified child with long hair and more feminine features, trying to, maybe if he put out a picture of a little girl, other people would recognize him. Mm-hmm. However, unfortunately, this also turned up nothing. But this is also only in 2008, so pretty recent.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just going to go through some more recent things that could potentially lead to solving this.
Okay.
On March 26, 2016, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children released a forensic facial reconstruction of the boy to officially add him to their database. Mm. And this looks, it's all done electronically, so it looks like a regular little boy. Yeah. Not like they stowed him up or anything.
Yeah.
And also, this is the most promising one. Only in August 2018, a woman named Barbara Ray Venter. Now, if you don't know who this is, she actually found out who the Golden State Killer was by using Ancestry DNA. Mm. Because, do you know the Golden State Killer?
No.
Okay, well, basically,
the name rings a bell.
Yeah.
But I don't know anything about the story.
Well,
I just
it's
know
really sick.
Of the story.
So he basically, when he was young, he did all this. He killed people, he raped people, mm-hmm. and he went and lived on his life like normal. Mm. And now he's an old man, and he was just captured recently.
Wow.
And now he obviously is serving life in jail. He honestly is, like, so old. I feel like it's not fair that he didn't, like, you know, pay for this when he was younger.
Earlier,
However, she did find him because his relatives were doing Ancestry. He didn't do it. But let's say his distant cousin did it, if mm-hmm. they could track it back to evidence they found at the scene. Mm-hmm. So they actually exhumed the boy's body in 1998 mm-hmm. and were able to get DNA from tooth enamel, actually. Mm-hmm. And they were able to keep that. So now they have the little boy's DNA, at least. And so she says that she's going to try to use the same methods to identify the boy in the box. Mm. Now, I haven't heard any updates, but since it was only 2018, this is very hopeful.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to take a while for them to really do the extensive stuff that you would have to do to find something like that.
Definitely. Now, I'm just going to close it with the boy's burial. Mm-hmm. So he actually was buried in a potter's field originally, which is basically a place for people who nobody knows and who don't have family to bury them. And he was officially reburied at Ivy Hill Cemetery in Cedarbrook, Philadelphia. And his headstone, unfortunately, is kind of sad to see, but his headstone just says America's Unknown Child.
Wow.
Yeah, so they don't know his name. They can't put a name on it. However, to this day, people who live around the area decorate his grave and, like, go and visit him and
that's
stuff.
That's nice.
So, yeah, even to this day, I feel like this is still a pretty active case.
Yeah, it's very exciting for... Originally, when we started this, I said, oh, that's one of the oldest cases we've done. But
yeah,
it still seems like one of the more promising ones, even though it happened so long ago.
Definitely. Even now, even in 2020 or 2021, like, new tips and stuff are still coming in. So I think that's so interesting.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So let us know if you guys think Martha's theories is credible. And also, if you have any other theories that I didn't mention that you heard of, we'd love to hear those. And we'll keep you updated with any new info that comes out about this case, since it does appear to be really active.
Hey, Queens, welcome back to the second half of our episode today. In this episode, I will be talking about an unexplained phenomena that occurs to an estimated 2 to 4% of people of all kinds of various ages throughout the world. Today, I will be talking about what is known as the worldwide hum, or more commonly known as simply the hum.
I never heard of that.
Well, so the hum is a low-frequency humming noise that is heard consistently by a person for an extended period of time for a not medically explainable reason.
Like all the time, even when they're sleeping, or?
It's different times during the day.
Okay.
It seems to be that the most popular times that you hear this hum would be nighttime.
Okay.
And a lot of people tend to hear it while they're indoors. However, various locations have more widespread problem with
is
the
it,
hum.
Is it an actual hum or is it in their head?
Well, that's according to who you ask.
Okay.
But it does seem to be this hum is not something that is explainable due to just medical reasons.
Okay.
It does seem like this is an outside source just because of the vast amount of people that experience it. Now, there are some people that have tinnitus, which is something that affects about 15 to 20% of people.
Okay.
Now, this is a constant ringing in the ear, and it is a symptom that is usually caused by an underlying condition such as hearing loss due to aging.
So the ringing and humming are not the same?
Yes, it is different.
Okay.
And this is usually due to some medical reason that you have this. This is a diagnosable symptom. The hum is just something that people hear from the outside. It's not something that they're making up in their head. So the hum is most often described as a low-pitched hum or a steady droning sound. I also read multiple descriptions of people comparing the hum to the sound of a running truck or car engine.
Okay, that's annoying.
Yes, so it's, to me, I imagine it being much louder than just a, everybody I feel like experiences some kind of ringing in their ear every once in a while.
Definitely.
Unless I'm just crazy.
No, you're not. I do too.
But this seems to be a much deeper, low-pitched frequency, and it seems to be a lot louder than just a background hum that you hear when, like, there's, like, complete silence and you just start to make up that noise behind your ear. So, often, people describe hearing it in a specific place, with the most common of which being in their homes. However, some have also described it as a noise that they hear at specific times during the day, which I did read in most accounts, it seems to be at nighttime.
Okay, that makes sense. That's the time when everything's the most quiet.
Exactly.
Or when you're alone.
Exactly. Now, before I get into the explanations that scientists have tried to use to describe the hum, I'm going to talk about the most popular locations for the hum. As although this is something that has been described globally, there are several locations that have large, dense amount of people that claim to hear the hum. The first place that the hum was recorded ever was in Bristol, England, in the United Kingdom. And the United Kingdom has consistently remained one of the most reported locations for the hum. It was originally reported in the 60s, so this is not that long ago.
Yeah, no.
But became a widely studied idea by the 1970s. After several individual reports throughout the decade, the media latched onto the idea by 1977. Sunday Mirror, which is just a British tabloid magazine, released a story titled, "Have You Heard the Hum?" After the release of this article, hundreds of people responded with similar stories to the original authors, with most mentioning they heard it indoors and at night. How the hum became popularized is similar to how it did in other locations as well. A few cases would appear, the media would report on it, and then hundreds or thousands of more cases would suddenly pop up. So it seems to be a domino effect kind of thing. As one person says it, then somebody says, oh, me too, me too.
That makes sense. Especially because it's not like you can't medically diagnose it or anything.
Exactly. So some people probably don't mention it because they might think they're crazy, that they're just hearing this noise and nobody else is hearing it.
Yeah.
So once a couple people say it, though, more people are going to come forward to admit that they hear it.
Yeah, and I'd be afraid to come forward because I feel like it could be symptoms of schizophrenia, and you could think that you had schizophrenia, especially because a lot of schizophrenia is auditory.
100%.
So, yeah, people think that anyone with schizophrenia always just see things mm-hmm. passing by or something, but most of it is auditory. Like, you'll hear your mom calling you, and yeah. she's not, or you'll just hear things that really aren't there. So I would be afraid to come forward thinking that they were going to make me think I was...
100%, because when I thought of schizophrenia, it would be, like, voices in your head kind of thing. And yeah. although this isn't a voice, it's still a random, unexplainable noise.
Yeah, that would scare me.
Yeah. So the most famous location for this hum in the United States, and one of the most famous incidents of the hum in the world, is the Taos hum. The Taos hum is a hum that centers around the town of Taos in northern New Mexico. This hum did appear much later than the one in Bristol, England, as the first reports of it appeared in the 90s. By 1993, Congress became involved because of the alarming incoming of complaints. Now, according to a study by the University of New Mexico, 2% of residents in the town can hear the hum, which 2 seems like a low number, but realistically, it's 2% of people in one city should not be yeah. hearing a random noise. Now, it is worth mentioning that the Taos hum does have a lot more inconsistencies in it than the original Bristol, England hum. The frequency reported in New Mexico varied vastly between 32 hertz and 80 hertz, so people were hearing different hums. There also has been reports of a mile radius for the distance you can hear the hum, with the average appearing to be around a 30-mile radius. So this is not someone hears it specifically in their home. This is somebody 30 miles away from you could be hearing the same exact hum that you are.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be hard to say, oh, this one specific place is the cause of it.
Yeah.
When people so far away with you are hearing the same thing. There have been many possible conclusions and reasons for the hum in New Mexico. However, despite extensive research by several universities and credible sources, there is no definitive answer, and it remains inconclusive to this day.
So does this hum seem to happen in more populated areas? Because in my mind, it would happen in complete, like, desolate, middle-of-nowhere places.
Well, that would make a lot of sense, right? Because a lot of times, if you're listening for a noise, you're going to hear it a lot more mm-hmm. if that's the only noise that's being made.
Yeah.
But it does seem to happen in a wide variety of places. There does seem to be incidences of it being in places that it's not super populated, but also, I'll get to it later, there's one in Seattle, there's one in Ontario, so these are all places that have a lot of people in it that would be producing a lot of noise.
Yeah.
So it seems to be both that it can occur in.
Are there any in New York, like a lot? I just want to know, because we live here.
I didn't see one specific one where it was, it happens very, very frequently in New York, but I'm sure there are people that experience it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not one of the locations where a vast majority or a big group of your population hears it, but in New York, I'm still there's people that do hear it, even if it's not a large group of them. So another place that has famously had a hum is in Ontario, Canada, specifically in Windsor. This is a much more recent hum compared to the others, and this hum did appear to be the loudest from the citizens reported. In 2012, in a local teleconference called to address the hum, more than 22,000 people called in to speak about their experiences.
Oh, wow, that's a lot.
That is a lot of people. Now, although many that deal with the hum are not convinced at this conclusion, people have circled the hum here to factories located on Zug Island. Now, Zug Island is an industrial area that has a U.S. steel factory in it. I actually read a story from The Guardian that made me really sympathize with a lot of the people that experience this hum specifically. It has apparently grown in volume consistently as time has gone on. However, since Zug Island is a U.S. property, Canadian authorities cannot really step in to confirm that this is where the hum is coming from, or use their authority to change production to lower the sound of this hum.
How do you sleep at night with it? I can't get over that.
Oh, and it's really, some people were describing it as, like, life-altering.
Yeah.
Like, it's so loud that they can't concentrate or think outside their homes.
But can you, like, would earplugs work in that situation? Or is it kind of, like, in your head? Like, or possibly is it in your head where you can't get rid of it?
Well, I do think earplugs might work, but then you can't hear anything else that you're doing.
It's like,
it's different from just a hum that you might just experience in your mind, because most people consider it they're hearing it, mm-hmm. not just, like, thinking of this hum.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's two different, you know, mm-hmm. experiences for hearing.
That would also be bad, because then you wouldn't hear any of your alarms.
Yeah. Okay. So this one especially, I feel bad for it, because although you can't confirm that it's from Zug Island, it does seem the most likely cause is from there, but they really can't do anything about it right now because they don't have the authorization to do something like that. Now, The last town that I'm going to specifically highlight is one that comes from Indiana in the city of Kokomo. In 2003, yeah, I know, I was suspicious at first too, but that is, it is Kokomo. Not Kokomo of the song, but
yeah.
Kokomo. So in 2003, this home became widespread enough that the government stepped in to locate and try their best to eliminate the source of the hum. They eventually did find the two sources that most believe the hum comes from. Just like the hum in Canada, the hum was discovered to be caused by two industrial sources. The first being a Chrysler casting plant, and the second being an air compressor from a power plant. However, after actions were taken to correct the hum coming out of these plants, there have still been very consistent reports of the hum in this town since then. So they said, oh, we came in and corrected it. However, people are still experiencing it.
I'm confused, though. Like, so it's coming from these factories. Wouldn't everybody hear it? Or wouldn't the people working there hear it?
That's what I'm saying. So it's weird. Well, some people do not hear certain frequencies.
Yeah.
For example, this is so specific. My dad, terrible hearing. Shout out my dad, terrible hearing. He can't hear certain people's voices as good because he can't hear certain frequencies. So me and my mom both have really deep voices, so I can hear ours well. He has a hard time hearing my sister because my sister's voice is a higher frequency.
That's so interesting.
So a lot of people, it's same thing like dogs. Dogs, high-pitched frequencies, that there is a sound going on. Dogs can hear them, but we can't hear a dog whistle. Only dogs can. So it's the same kind of thing. Only 2% of people are able to hear that hum. But still, if it's coming from a huge power plant, to me, it would seem like a larger percent than 2%
of people. Yeah,
exactly. So it is... And like I said, people are still experiencing it, even though they've said, oh, we stopped the reason for the hum. There should be no more hum. Well, then why are all these people still saying that they hear it?
Yeah.
Now, clearly, industrial sources is a commonly used explanation, or some may say excuse, to explain the worldwide hum. But there are other explanations used by scientists to justify the hum's existence. One reason that some people say is evolution, as it would make sense for a species to have a few of its members have a hypersensitive hearing to this kind of frequency. One article I read compared it to pets often being able to detect an earthquake. If a high-pitched noise like this may serve as a warning of danger, some humans may have just become more sensitive to these kinds of noises. So it does kind of make logical sense for some people to be able to do this. But then again, that still begs the question of where is this hum that 2% of people can hear coming from?
Yeah.
Now, another explanation for the source of the sound is animals. There are a few instances of the hum being traced back to animals, specifically on the west coast of the United States. A famous hum that occurred in Seattle was blamed on a mating call by midshipman fish. However, this was viewed as an unsatisfying conclusion, as this does not explain the hum being heard primarily indoors. So again, another example of this is where a hum is coming from, which... I'm sure there was a hum coming from this fish, but then why are people hearing it?
Yeah, in their houses and stuff.
Exactly. Another excuse, although a controversial one that is not super supported in the scientific community, is that a jet stream is the cause of these hums. In 1973, people argued that jet streams coming into contact with slower moving air streams and power lines may cause a 30 hertz vibration against these power lines and rooms that already have a sound coming out of it at a similar frequency. Which I guess does make sense, but a lot of scientists were saying that just scientifically, biologically, is not something that would occur.
Mm-hmm.
So some people have argued that, but it's not super backed up. The reasoning besides industrial sources that I found that I can buy into the most is spontaneous autoacoustic emissions, or SOAEs. Anywhere from 38 to 60% of adults can experience this at one time or another. It is a random noise that people generate in their ears instead of experiencing silence, which I have heard this before.
Yeah, me too.
So this, I can buy into it. This does explain why the hum might be commonly heard inside and at night, because those are times and places that is usually more quiet. Which, so this does explain it sometimes, but to me, the people that report hearing the real hum seem to hear it for such an extended period of time.
Yeah.
That... To me, if I hear a random hum, if I start doing something else or hear another sound, I'm going to start losing it and not hearing the hum anymore.
You know, I'll do that on purpose sometimes because I'll just have this, like, ringing in my ears and I have to, like, distract myself from it.
Yeah, and then eventually it goes away.
Yeah.
This hum, now, most people do report they don't hear it 24/7, but they will hear it for long periods of time, even if they put on a different background noise.
Does it ever permanently go away, or do people just hear it for life, kind of?
I'm sure there are cases of people not hearing it, especially... I'm sure there's people that were lived in one of the specific cities where it was common and then moved somewhere else and reported not hearing it anymore. Yeah. But it does seem to, there are people that have been hearing it for years and years and years at a time. One other possible factor that people have considered is seismic activity called microseism, which are very quiet and low-frequency tremors that are caused by ocean waves. So again, this does make sense, especially in locations such as Seattle, the west coast of the United States, even New Mexico, it's pretty close to the coast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's close enough. So places in England, that's an island on itself, so it does make sense in some locations, but others, it would still be weird. In the middle of America, you hear a hum from the ocean. But also, again, if you think about it, this also is about like Earth's movements, like earthquake kind of waves. So I can see where this one can come into play. And the most popular conspiracy theory about why the hum is happening is governmental experiments. Of course it is.
Yeah, of course.
So this is a program that I've mentioned before when we were talking about chemtrails.
I was just thinking about chemtrails.
Yes, so this one ties into it a little bit. The High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, or HAARP, has been a popular center for why the hum is being created.
Okay.
Which,
how so?
This program is the same one that we said, a program that might be the thing that is creating the chemtrails. So it's basically being used for mind control, is what the thought is, which I don't know why I mean, do I 100% this is happening? I don't know.
Yeah.
But most the conspiracy theories that I tend to believe are the ones where the government is doing something fishy.
Yeah, me too.
So I can get behind a government agency doing like this more than anything else.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, this program is, this is direct from the website that I was reading it on. It conducts research on Earth's ionosphere, and it conducts experiments, basically, to study the atmosphere. So this would be the kind of program that would have the wide-ranging ability and the widespread ability to create a sound that could be heard globally, not just in the United States, but again, this is the United States program, so it makes sense that it's heard globally, but the United States is the main target of them if this is a noise created by this specific program. So, just a thought.
So, why, you said it's for mind control?
Yes.
So why is it for such a small amount of people?
Well, I think that if you try to make everyone experience this noise, then someone is going to figure out, like, this is a major problem and gonna try to find an answer.
And also, if you make somebody go insane, everybody around them is also gonna go insane because of them. So that's kind of smart. It's like a domino effect.
Like, if you think about it, if 2% of America just, like, was suddenly under the control of something and there was no prior warning to anyone else, like, that could cause some damage.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
So, of course, you know, it's take smart. It with a grain of salt, but again, I don't know why I feel like something fishy is happening with this conspiracy theory. I mean, there's a lot of theories that I believe, but this one, usually I'll start with like, oh, like this could be a silly conspiracy theory, you know, it might not be true. But this one, like, I don't know what I really think about it, but I do think that there's something odd going on with the whole situation.
Definitely.
Now, of course, I've also read the conspiracy theory about it might be aliens, which...
That's for everything, there's always aliens.
100%. Everything that is unexplainable,
You
tie back to something else that is unexplainable so that you can answer questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I've read that one. It came up. It seemed to be the second most popular besides the government mind control about the hum. Of course, there's no specific evidence that it is aliens, but again, an understandable one.
Yeah.
So the last thing that I'm going to mention about the hum is that it does have really life-altering negative effects on people, especially mentally. Now, I'm going to quote this part because I just thought it was a good explanation for the really damaging things that is done to people. I hear the hum. So the psychological effect of low frequencies on humans is well known. Exposure to low-frequency sound waves has a negative effect on human cognitive performance, such as visual functions, concentration, and attention. Numerous studies have shown that even when the noise is not audible, subjects show agitation, nervousness, apprehension, distraction, disappointment, and psychological disorders such as depression, stress, and irritability. Because if you think about it, if you're someone that hears this hum for 4 or 5 hours of the day, when you're just sitting at home, all you're doing is waiting for the hum to start again.
Yeah.
So it's going to make it hard for you to maintain your focus.
I would always be paranoid, and 100%. Also I'd have really bad mood swings.
100%, because you're just going to be thinking about, okay, so I don't hear it now, but I know in a couple hours when I get home, I'm going to hear it.
And I feel like I take my anger out on everyone around me.
100%. So, which can especially lead into the part where you start getting depressed and stressed, and it can mess up your social relationships with people. Mm-hmm. So if, especially if this hum is something that is man-made cause, it does bother me a lot just because it is doing such damage to people.
Yeah.
So that's everything I have on the worldwide hum.
That's so interesting. When you said it was about a hum, I thought it was so random, but yeah. No, it's actually really interesting.
Yeah, it really, I've known about this, and then I was like, oh, well, it can't be that many people. It's probably just explainable, a couple people hear it, blah, blah, blah. But it really is such a large group of people that I don't know why, for some reason, I really feel something's going on here, but I really feel something's going on here.
Let us know your theories about this, and if you heard, or if you're a person who experiences this, that would be really cool to hear.
Please, if you happen to be someone that hears this consistent hum,
we'd love to hear your experiences.
Let us know. I'm so curious to know.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed. Tune in every Friday for more mystery and madness.
Bye, queens.